This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. You're listening to WGN Radio. Pete Zimmerman is the producer. I'm John Williams. Thanks for joining us along the way. And let's start with a look at the markets and the big picture and even the little picture with Joseph Safina. He is the founder and CEO of Safina Asset Management. You can visit Safina, that's SAFINA.com. Hey, Joe, welcome to the show. You're on WGN Radio.
Thank you, John. Thank you for having me.
I hope I'm saying that correctly. Safina?
Just like it sounds, Safina, yes, S-A-F-I-N-A.
Founder and CEO of Safina Asset Management. So like it sounds, you are a asset manager for clients?
Well, not really. I mean, we're more of a private equity group, and that was just the name of the company, so we kept it. But we look to, but we buy a lot of distressed assets. We do a lot of exciting stuff, and we still, of course, trade on a regular basis.
I saw Jim Cramer say the other day that he thinks actually now that there's news of a vaccine, there might be actually more entry points for people that want to buy stocks. The, say, NASDAQ and the Dow, for that matter, have been lifted over the pandemic by five stocks, essentially. Maybe now we'll have sort of a broader base of strength in the markets. Would you agree with that?
Well, you know, there's so many contributing factors, and, you know, betting on the market, betting on a strong recovery has been a winning formula over the past, you know, since the pandemic happened. And I think that will continue. However, there's a few warning signs that we have to look out for. You know, number one, I track transportation. It's very important. We own a couple of logistics companies and factoring companies in the space, and we look at, are things moving around? And things are. I mean, people are shipping, they're moving, but when it comes down to it at the end of the day, I'm really concerned about the jobs in these smaller businesses, you know, the mom and pop type storefront businesses that have all gone out of business or are struggling through it. Mm-hmm. And that's going to lag the recovery a little bit. I don't think we're going to see, I think we're going to be, see a pullback if there's a shutdown, obviously. It's going to be significant. I'm a buyer on pullbacks in light of that. I think that the economy will eventually cover and the market is a good long-term bet. However, you know, it's not bad to have some cash on the sidelines. There's a lot of talk of the pandemic getting a lot worse over the next couple of months and significant shutdowns happening. And that's going to, now we're going into stimulus and we're going into debt, you know, conversations and even GDP conversations at that point. The relationship between, you know, the ratio of GDP to debt is getting in the concerning range right now. So there's a lot of contributing factors. Got to keep an eye on it, buy on pullbacks, and, you know, hope for the best.
Do you think that a stimulus package would sort of keep the markets up?
Of course. You know, from a debt standpoint and the cost of debt, we could certainly we could take another stimulus package, and I think we need it. Ultimately, I think we'll get there. But there's a lot of unanswered questions right now, and
yeah.
The uncertainty is just, you know, unprecedented. We've never seen a situation like this before, so it's really hard to, you know, draw a pattern.
Do you think a Biden administration would mean tighter regulations, and will there be impact that way?
I think that we are going to see, I think the economy will continue to roll. I think we're going to have some, you know, tax issues we're going to have to deal with. I think there's going to be some struggle. I'm not sure he's going to figure out health care. There hasn't been truly a great package that came out since, I mean, when you look at like some of these, health care companies, since 2015, let me think of one that we've been long Humana forever. You know, we own it since, you know, probably $150. And when you look at it, it's more than quadrupled or, you know, it's really performed well. So I don't think Biden's going to come up with a great formula for healthcare. So I don't see him fixing that. Do I think there's going to be tighter regulation on business startup? No, I don't. I think he's going to take what we've learned from the Trump administration as far as, you know, feeding the entrepreneur and what that does for the economy. I think there's going to be a struggle on the stimulus package, though. I think it's going to take some time to pull that off.
Yeah. Well, and that's a problem for Congress, too. I don't have time to talk about that today, but I know we're going to continue to see when they get interested in moving. Yesterday, Mitch McConnell said he doesn't see anything happening before the first of the year, and he didn't sound too enthusiastic. And frankly, Nancy Pelosi didn't either, because they both have different ideas about what that package should look like. Joseph Safina is the founder and CEO of Safina Asset Management, SAFINA.com. Nice to talk to you today, Joseph. Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure, my pleasure.
Glad you're able to be on the line. It's 12:16. Ian Schur joins us on the Wintrust Business Lunch, the editor-at-large at CNET, CNET.com. Hi, Ian.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good. I like the looks of this new Apple MacBook. Can you talk about it a little bit?
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's going on that's really interesting in the tech world, but super nerdy, so I'm warning you now,
right,
is that Apple is changing the insides of their computers dramatically. So up until for the last 14 years, they've been using the same chips mostly that everyone else has, chips made by Intel. That's what probably is running the computer in front of you right now. But Apple has decided to go their own, and the chips that they've made for the iPhone and the iPad, they say, are good enough to put in a computer. And we haven't reviewed them yet at CNET. They're going to be launching next week. But what they're showing is massive improvements and possibly even getting better battery life than they used to get. And what I think is really interesting is their MacBook Airs, which start at $1,000, don't even have fans on them. They say that they don't get too hot, that they need a fan, which is a major change from what we're used to. So it's a really interesting change, and it means a lot about where the tech industry may go in the future.
Man, bummer for Intel, huh?
A very big bummer. They have had a very bad couple of years, if you've been paying attention. Their competition against AMD, who used to be kind of the second banana to them, has just completely turned around. And now that phone chips are getting powerful enough to compete with their computers, it is just looking worse and worse for them every day, and they don't really have a good answer to it.
You said Netflix is going to experiment with its own TV channel like I'm used to?
Yeah, so this is also kind of a what's old is new again type thing, right? So apparently what's been going on is that Netflix has been testing in France the idea of a linear channel. Literally, you just click on the button and it's playing Netflix movies or TV shows or whatever else. And part of the reason they're doing it in France, by the way, is that French people apparently prefer traditional television type experiences, whatever. And so what's interesting is that, you know, I don't know about you, but when I sign on to Netflix, that home screen, I have decision fatigue thinking about it. There's so much stuff that they've made and put on there. And so this idea of having something that, you know, Saturday evening or in the afternoon when the rain's going on, you're suddenly able to pop in and maybe see a movie you like is an interesting idea.
Would that schedule then say Queen's Gambit would be on Thursday nights at 7 o'clock, something like that?
I honestly don't know how they'll do it. This is just a small test they're doing in France right now. But if this grows, one of the things you have to keep in mind about Netflix is that they are very data-driven, and they will follow what we as users do on the service. So if a bunch of people use it and start tuning in and really enjoying it, they might actually do that and make what real television is.
Imagine that. Speaking of real television, is Nielsen going to change rating systems or commercial systems?
Unfortunately, it's the commercials. So I don't know if you've had this experience. Most people tell me they have, where you've been looking at something on Amazon or Zappos or whatever, and then you go on to Facebook and you see an ad for that exact pair of shoes you were looking at.
Yep.
Well, that is something that's going to start showing up on your television. Nielsen, this technology has existed for a long time, and I've been hearing about it for over a decade, but now it's actually happening, where advertisers will be able to actually target you based on what they think they know about your household and show you ads on television that are very related to you. So I will no longer be probably getting ads about vacations because I have not taken a vacation forever, or a car because I just bought a car. I don't need a new one. But they'll probably show me other stuff for, like, latest movies coming out and other nerdy stuff that's interesting. And I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how people respond to it because, of course, it's really creepy.
Commercials can be very helpful, too. If I need a car or shoes, I've not minded that input of information, but you're right. After a while, it's overwhelming and almost inaccurate because I've already bought the car or the shoe and I don't need this anymore. Would that be like on CBS TV or NBC or CNN or Channel 9 here, a local TV station?
In theory, yes, right? We don't know how it would play out in the end yet, but ad targeting would effectively allow them, you know, if you use, for example, I don't know if you use Spotify, the music streaming service, but they actually are doing this right now. They will target you with individualized ads based on the music that you listen to, thinking they know enough about you to send you an ad that's good for you.
Yeah.
You can decide whether it's right. But this is basically what they're going to do. They're going to put a different ad in the stream for you versus the ad in the stream for me. So if we're both watching CNN in the news and we're watching the election or whatever, you know, I might get an ad for a new Ford truck while you're getting an ad for the next movie coming out.
Right.
And I don't know if it'll be good, right? I mean, the thing about television ads in theory is that they're so broadly thought of that, you know, they work for pretty much anybody. So I don't know how this will play out, but it did feel like an inevitability for someone like me who's been watching this world for a long time.
Might be more revelatory than I want it to be. If I'm sitting there watching TV with Brenda and all the ads are about bourbon, she's going to look at me and say, you know.
Absolutely. Well, and then also the important thing to keep in mind is that we've learned from Facebook, a lot of these advertisers don't actually know us very well. You can actually go on Facebook. We have instructions on CNET to see what Facebook thinks they know about you. And often it includes even your political leanings, even if you never told them, just based on what you do on Facebook. So a lot of this stuff is wrong to start with, but then you're going to start getting ads based on it. So it's going to be a weird experience, I think.
Speaking of social media platforms, what's Parler and what's happening there?
Yeah, so it's an alternative social network, and it's actually based on the French word for talk, which is parler. And what the interesting thing about it is that as people have gotten angrier and angrier at Facebook and Twitter, particularly in the last couple of weeks, as they ramped up efforts to stop disinformation and misinformation around voting, a lot of conservative leaders and senators and all sorts of other people have started saying, let's move on over to Parler or Parlay instead. And it's gotten like millions of new people signing up. That's not billions like Facebook has, but it's a start. And there have been a lot of people who have tried to kind of unseat Twitter and Facebook and tried to be the quote-unquote alternative that offers more free speech or whatever else. But a lot of times they don't work because you can't get your grandma to use it, right? And that's what a lot of us are on social media for. So I don't know if it'll play out, but it does say something that Parler or Parler, whatever you want to call it, has started banning people based on bad behavior on there already. So yeah. I have a feeling we're just going to repeat all of the same problems.
Same stuff, different place. I've seen Ted Cruz. I saw Devin Nunes yesterday actually say, see you over at Parler or one of these other sites. And
yep.
I suppose it'll just be another way we are fractured in this country. I don't know that that's a good thing, but there is that thing. Okay, Ian Scher, editor-at-large, CNET.com. Thanks, Ian. We'll talk next week.
Have a great day.
The Friends Experience, which is a friend's room. You kind of go in like those pop-ups, only this is more extensive. It's right on Michigan Avenue. Yesterday we talked to Bill Rancic, who's just opened Bill's Original Tavern Pizza. I'm shining a light on businesses that are coming downtown and making a go of it. And here's another one that I think you really might enjoy. It's at 25 East Washington Street, which puts it just steps from Millennium Park. This is at 25 East Washington Street, and it's called the Museum of Illusions, Chicago. Let's talk a little bit about that with Stacy Steck. She's the marketing manager at the Museum of Illusions, Chicago. I'll get you the URL on that. It's museumofillusions.us. Stacy, you're on WGN. Welcome.
Hi, John. Thank you for having me.
What do I see when I go into a Museum of Illusions?
Oh, my goodness. It is an incredible experience, first and foremost. We are a one-of-a-kind edutainment destination that's really all about illusions. Edutainment is quite simply education plus entertainment. And we find that when you fuse learning and fun together, that you create a more meaningful and memorable experience. And guests will get to experience over 80 mind-bending illusions. And in some exhibits, you will even become part of the illusion. You're going to experience literally the unbelievable at Museum of Illusions.
So I imagine I'm going to learn about science or optics or things like that, huh?
Absolutely. I like to say that, you know, our museum is a lot science and a little art with a good amount of social media-worthy photo ops.
So can you, no kidding, I saw in your promotional material that it's a very Instagrammable place, and depending on what the illusion is, it might be a fun picture to take. I presume we can take our smartphones in there?
100%, we encourage it. So, and our staff is well-trained on tips and tricks on how you can get the best photo for your social media feed.
So give me an example, though. Like, what am I looking at or doing when I'm in there?
Oh, you know, we have a few. We do have a few immersive rooms that you can walk into and become part of the illusion. And those are the rooms where we tend to get some really good pictures. And one of those specifically is the rotated room. Now, the rotated room is super fun. And the first thing you'll notice about this room is that things look a little off because you'll see furniture bolted to the wall and the light fixtures that aren't overhead, but rather on the wall next to you. And what you do is you walk in and you get as creative as you want with your poses, snap a picture, rotate it 90 degrees for a truly off-the-wall photo. So it will look like people are hanging from ceilings, balancing, you know, midair. So it's pretty exciting. You can get some great photos. And I love seeing the creativity of our guests that come in.
Do you have that room where things look really tall or really small? I don't know if I just described that.
That's our Ames room. That's a fan favorite as well. And from the outside looking in, you see an ordinary square room, but in fact, the room is masterly distorted, which creates an optical illusion of relative size. And your eyes won't believe what they're seeing as you appear to grow and shrink as you walk from one corner of the room to the next. And obviously, you can take some great photos with one person in one corner and another person in the other corner, and one will seem to be a giant while the other will be so small. So it's pretty fun.
Are there mirrors in this place too?
Yes, we have many mirrors. We have many illusions that play with mirrors, angles, and you know, we use math and geometry to create those angles to allow you to see some pretty incredible illusions. Yes.
Talk to me just briefly about the safety of this place then. I'm sure that's on your mind.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've really taken the perspective that this is an opportunity for us to be proactive and plan our museum with a pandemic in mind. You know, your mindset and your planning really has to shift. And instead of asking the question, how many people can we fit in here, it's more like, how can we space out our exhibits and maximize social distancing? So we've made sure our floor plans allowed this, and we've created a one-way flow throughout the museum to help with this. And in addition, we were able to prioritize the installation of a Casper HVAC air purification system and touchless bathrooms early in our build-out phase. And like all businesses, we're following local and state guidelines and restrictions, including temperature checks, masks are required. We also do maximum cleaning with high-grade cleaning solutions that are known to kill COVID. And we have plenty of hand sanitizing stations throughout the museum. But we've also kept capacity, too, at 25%. And we're making sure that we stay within those limits with our time ticketing system. So as you can see, we're taking COVID very seriously. We want to give people a fun and a safe experience when they come out, because we know people are looking for it.
The Museum of Illusions, museumofillusions.us. Is it chicago.museumofillusions.us? Check it out?
That's exactly right. Chicago.museumofillusions.us is where you can find out a little bit more about us and also purchase your tickets and plan your visit.
And is this a permanent fixture? Is this something that is here for the long run, or is this a limited engagement?
We are, and we're in it for the long haul here in Chicago. So we're really excited to be part of the Loop neighborhood. So we will be permanently located at 25 East Washington Street.
25 East Washington. Where's that, John? It's right near Millennium Park. Look for Millennium Park, and you're stone's throw from this place. Oh, what a good idea.
Yeah.
I'm excited about it. I'm excited for you. Let's all head on over there. Thank you for the time, Stacy.
Great. Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
That's Stacy Steck, and she is the marketing manager, can you tell, of the Museum of Illusions. Good for them. It's 12:42. More business news now with Steve Grzanich on WGN.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Illinois will be getting more doses of a new COVID-19 therapy than any other state. Cranes reports the state will receive nearly 6,400 doses of the new antibody drug being made by Eli Lilly. This week, the FDA approved the drug to treat mild and moderate patients who are at risk of developing more severe symptoms. Because supply is limited, the federal government decides how many doses go to each state. Texas will be getting the second most. Companies in the Chicago area have had some of the least success among major U.S. regions bringing employees back to the office. That's according to Castle Systems International, a provider of access control systems. Only about a quarter of workers among all 10 cities returned to the office last week. The steepest decline in the last week came in the Chicago area, where the building occupancy rate fell to 16.2%. No more waiting for those limited edition Oreos to hit store shelves. Fans can now create their own cookies. Oreo from snack maker Mondelez International is offering two ways to customize them online. One is to just choose the cream filling. There are 8 colors available, including red, green, purple, and pink. The other option is design. Cookies can be dipped in white or classic fudge and or be covered in sprinkles. A photo or text can even be added. It's all part of the new Oreo ID feature. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Okay, Amy, you ready? So which one should we start on? The hesitancy of people to go back into the offices or delivering the vaccine?
Well, my goodness, they're both really interesting stories. Let's start with the offices and do them in the order that you said. So there was a study from Castle Systems International. If you swipe into your office building with a fob or a key card or something like that, there's a good chance they've got something to do with it. They run a ton of 3,600 buildings and 41,000 businesses in 47 states. They're kind of everywhere. So they've been doing this study. They call it the Castle Return to Work Barometer. And they've been tabulating that key card and fob access and putting it into the 10 largest U.S. metro areas. They put that into a 10-day city average. Well, Chicagoans on that list are the most reluctant to go back to the office. Dallas is the most willing. They saw a much bigger increase. About 41% of workers in Dallas were back at work as in the period that they were measuring, and they measure it week by week. They have seen it drop off lately here. So just in the last couple of weeks they were measuring, they saw it drop off here where fewer people are going back in that last week that they measured, where Dallas workers were still up, that number was still up a lot higher. But we are not the worst. We are among the most reluctant, but we're not the most reluctant. New York City does have us beat. Only about 13% of workers were back in the office during the week that was measured, where we were around about 14 to 16%. So
15-16% Chicago go back to the office. I'd say it feels like that downtown, and even less so in New York. Is there a correlation between warm weather cities, you said Dallas, and their willingness to go back to the office?
Well, you know, I don't know about that. I mean, we did see 25% here at a point that they measured, and we are just coming off of summer. I think a lot more of it has to do with case numbers, as we've seen cases spike here, and how open things are, and like the restrictions put forth by local officials. I think that has a lot to do with it. I think part of that too is when we look at the cities where people are going back to work more, Dallas, Houston, Austin, LA, those are big driving cities. You don't really hop on the L and go to work in Dallas. You drive there. So that might be part of it. The people feel a little more assured about going, hey, as long as I feel like my office is pretty sanitary, what's the harm of going? Versus, do I want to get on the bus or the L and then walk over to another train and do all that? I think it might be, part of that might also be about the logistics of getting to your office.
Yeah, my red line is pretty empty these days, but Dallas, Houston, Austin, LA are all warm weather cities. And
yeah,
maybe car-friendly cities. Talk to me about the logistics of getting a vaccine around the country and world.
Yeah, I think we're going to be talking more and more and more about this topic. It is really, really quite interesting. We first kind of, this first got on my radar over the summer. I think I've mentioned to you, there is basically a convention every year that if you are in the shipping logistics business, you go to this convention. Well, it was held on Zoom this year. And it was very interesting because pretty much the whole thing was devoted to, okay, at one point there's going to be a vaccine. What the heck are we going to do? And now that we have this announcement from Pfizer earlier this week that they, in an initial clinical trial, they saw 90% of symptomatic infections were prevented with this. It's still in clinical trial, so it's not yet proven. But once we do have a proven vaccine, which is coming soon enough, the next part of that is attention is going to turn to, okay, how do we get it everywhere? And I thought this was very interesting. The CEO of Cargolux Airlines International, which is Europe's biggest cargo-only airline, so they definitely have a lot to say about this topic. He was talking in a statement, he was discussing the role of cargo aircraft for this, which is, to me, very fascinating because here we have a lot of planes that are not seeing as much action these days. It might be a great opportunity for air carriers to do this way because you need ambient air temperature, but you have to package them in a special way. Pfizer has recommended that the vaccine stay at minus 112 degrees Fahrenheit, so about minus 80 Celsius. That's pretty darn cold. And there's a limit to how much the box can be opened, and it only has about a 10-day lifespan, so it has to be really quickly handled. And so there's containers that he is envisioning being outfitted in passenger aircraft in order to get this vaccine around the world. He said something I thought was very interesting. His quote is, all the passenger aircraft in the world will be mobilized to transport these vaccines. He also went on to talk a little bit more about some other logistic stuff. He said the important thing is the last mile, getting it to the hospital or clinic where it's going to be used, because it can get, you know, you can fly it somewhere quickly. We can outfit passenger planes to try to make up some revenue for them. But then once that plane lands, the clock is really ticking pretty quickly and loudly to get it to that hospital or clinic. But I think we're going to see a lot more of this conversation, this topic, as we move forward and think about we're going to have to inoculate just about most of the world in order for it to work. Otherwise, it's going to continue to rage in some areas. So getting it to especially very remote areas, different types of climate. We have to get it to very, very hot areas as well as very cold areas. So it'll be very, very interesting. His recommendation, his hope anyway, was that we manufacture it in many, many places. In fact, I think he said as many places as we can, so that we could cut down on some of that shipping capacity and get it to more people in different ways and quickly as possible.
Think about it as a Marshall Plan for Earth over and over and over again. Amy Guth on the logistics of that. And keep reporting on that, Amy. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks so much, John.